Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Safety concerns accelerate conversations about courthouse renovation. By Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. At a commissioner's court meeting held on February 14th, Presidio County officials once again revisited the daunting prospect of renovating the historic Marfa Courthouse. The issue has popped up time and again over the past year as local leaders have debated where the county's limited funding should go first. The conversation started in earnest under previous County Judge Cinderella Guevara, who hired In Situ Architecture, an El Paso-based firm, to evaluate what the building needed the most. After sweating through countless high desert summers, county employees felt strongly about replacing the building's aging AC system, but had to weigh their personal comfort with the need for a new elevator and repairs to the old jail building, which houses many of the county's historical records. A classic Marfa versus Presidio debate also emerged over the county annex building, which South County representatives insist is as equally and urgently in need of repair. The building has been plagued with flooding issues since it was built, and an especially damp fall of 2022 led to mold issues so severe that Justice of the Peace Juanita Bishop's offices needed to be relocated. The elevator at the Marfa Courthouse may emerge as the top priority. At a commissioner's court meeting on January 24th, Precinct 1 Commissioner David Beebe implored the court to consider the liability issues the county could face if the elevator failed. He had personally refused to use the elevator since taking office as Justice of the Peace in 2015. Beebe explained that the particular design of the elevator wasn't reliant on cables, so there wasn't a risk the cables would snap, but that its hydraulic piston system was leaking oil and could potentially get stuck between floors. It's not a safety issue as far as falling and dying, but it could be a safety issue so far as getting stuck and not being able to get help, he explained. In addition to the upper floor courthouse employees, Beebe was concerned about the many visitors who come to the courthouse to access county services, see its historic architecture, and in some cases, get married. While it really is a functionality issue, it's also an embarrassment issue, he said. At the February 14th meeting, Gabriela Fierro of McKinstry, a design-build firm that handles both the planning and construction stages of a project, gave a presentation on what the company could offer the county. Alongside all the practical support McKinstry offers, Fierro explained that the firm can also help the county seek out and apply for grant funding. We make sure that we understand your specific financial landscape as we're planning for the critical issues you have now and planning for what there is to be done in the future, she said. County Judge Joe Portillo explained that the architectural assessment completed during Judge Guevara's tenure wasn't a waste of county cash. Instead, In Situ's findings would be incorporated into the process as a jumping-off point. The architectural plans that were done don't address a lot of things. Broken doors, windows, other things that need to be done, he said. It focuses on the emergency stuff that needs to be done now, or the building will deteriorate. There were a few reasons to be hopeful. McKinstry had worked on courthouse renovations before, and Fierro explained that historic courthouse projects were especially appealing to grant committees. At Wednesday's meeting, commissioners approved $45,000 for McKinstry for grant development services to help the county prepare a successful application for money from the Texas Historical Commission, THC, due in May. Fierro said that the three major projects, elevator, HVAC, and jailhouse roof, could potentially be covered by the grant. If the application is successful, the firm would wait for guidance before proceeding so as not to compromise the building's historical integrity. "We won't touch a door or a hinge or anything without the THC's approval first," she said. County Attorney Rod Ponton said that he had been doing his due diligence in working with the THC for its expertise and funding. For Ponton and many of the county officials in attendance, repairing the courthouse wasn't just about elevators and air conditioning, but about promoting a positive image for the county. "Getting somebody with specific knowledge will help Presidio County make the courthouse gleam again because we're so proud of it," he said. Photo by Roxanne Chavez, Pecos Enterprise. Sophomore Diego Jurado placed fourth in the 275 weight class at the Pecos LCQ last Thursday. Marfa ISD placed 12th overall at the event with Christopher Huerta, Jaden Nunez, Isaiah Ramos, Tony Sayens, and Jaden Villa also competing. Parents of slain Marfa teachers say it's been silence from DA incumbent Ori White on a new trial. By Rob D'Amico. Rob at BigBendSentinel.com. Eddy 3rd District. Parents of former Marfa ISD teacher Sophia Sullivan, who was stabbed to death in Fort Davis in 2018, are frustrated by a lack of communication from the district attorney, who they said has not contacted them about a retrial in the years after Sullivan's husband was freed with a hung jury in 2019. Now, with 83rd District Attorney Ori White running for another term, they worry the case will never be retried. "We're disappointed that there's been no follow-through at all from the district attorney," said Chuck Sabe, Sophia Sullivan's father. "This has certainly gone on for a long time, and it's been hard for myself and my family, and we haven't gotten the communications we hoped for." Sophia Sullivan, known as Sophie to friends and family, was found dead by her husband with more than 40 stab wounds in her Fort Davis home on March 16, 2018. Authorities quickly keyed in on her husband, Danny Sullivan, as a suspect, and charged him with capital murder. Some jurors and family members later stated that a series of missteps by Jeff Davis County law enforcement may have led to no forensic evidence tied to Danny. Then, DA and prosecutor Sandy Wilson relied on testimony from the Sullivan's son, who witnessed the murder and pointed to his father as the killer, but he was only 7 years old at the time. While 9 jurors voted to convict, 3 did not, resulting in a mistrial. Following the mistrial, Danny was freed and has been living in Illinois ever since. However, an Odessa judge ruled in favor of Sophie's mother, Theresa Blaine, in a wrongful death suit, naming Danny responsible for Sophie's death, and awarded her $7 million in damages last May. Danny continues to deny he had anything to do with the killing. Sabe, Sophie's father, said when White defeated Wilson in 2020, he promised Sophie's family that a retrial for the case would be a priority. But the parents have said there has been no communication from White ever since, with more than 4 years passing since the first trial in November 2019. White told the Texas Observer A new trial was planned for the spring of 2023. Then he moved that date to the summer of 2023, then to the fall of 2023. One of my highest priorities is to make sure that any victim of any type of crime is communicated with and knows what court dates are coming up, White told the Sentinel after his election victory in 2020. Sabi said he has been contacting White's office with no reply the past 2 weeks. The lines of communication have only been one way, Sabi said. It's been frustrating in my attempts to reach people. On Monday, White said he fully intends to retry the case. We're just waiting. All of our judges have just been inundated with cases that are on trial. We have to try cases where the people are in jail first. That's the rule throughout the state of Texas. So they don't have a choice about that. I don't have a choice about that either. However, no Texas law or rule requires judges to prioritize trying inmates awaiting a trial first. Texas laws on how long someone charged with a felony can be held in jail without an indictment can impact decisions by prosecutors and judges for setting trial dates. If there's a trial that's ready whenever a defendant is in custody, they'll get a priority setting, but that doesn't mean another trial doesn't get a setting, said Jesse Gonzalez, a former DA and current defense attorney running against White in the March 5th Republican primary. White's office later clarified that it's the judge's discretion on who to schedule for trial and when, and that the DA can merely suggest that they are ready and request a date. White said in the summer of 2022 that the defense and prosecution had agreed on a change of venue, since it would be difficult to find jurors in the Jeff Davis County area without substantial knowledge of the case to retain impartiality. Months later, White said that the defense would be responsible for filing a motion to change venue. Danny Sullivan no longer has defense counsel to file a motion. Either party can file that motion, and White told the Sentinel that no motion had been filed by either side, so it's unclear how a trial could even be considered anywhere in the near term if the venue hasn't been decided. We just have this inundation of cases, particularly people illegally transporting individuals from Mexico, White said of ongoing delays for setting trials. I don't know how many cases we have, what we have right now, but it's quite a few, definitely in the hundreds. Presidio County Attorney Rod Ponton, who faces a primary challenge from Marfa Attorney Blair Park, commented at the local candidate forum on February 10th that White had a backlog of 500 felony cases that had been filed but with no indictments. White provided the Sentinel with statistics from his term beginning in 2020. His office has handled 2,800 cases in the district's four counties, Pecos, Jeff Davis, Brewster, and Presidio. His office has prosecuted or disposed of 80% of those cases. The remaining 20% pending, about 560, include both indicted and unindicted defendants. The pending cases, therefore, are substantially small, considering the total number of cases handled, he reported. Gonzalez, a Fort Stockton attorney who served as DA from 2009 to 2012, said Sophie's murder case came up at 2 Fort Davis campaign events this month, and that it's a pretty hot topic. He said it would be impossible to comment on the possibility of a retrial if he was elected because he doesn't have access to the case file, evidence, and witnesses. Gonzalez also said he can't verify a backlog at the 83rd DA's office without access to the files. Court backlogs happen everywhere, some worse than others, Gonzalez said. If true, he said, that's a big number, a lot of cases to be filed but not disposed of, even if you go district-wide to all four counties. Gonzalez said he wants to make prosecutions more timely so people don't get frustrated. Financially fraught nonprofit Big Bend Community Action Committee to dissolve by Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Tri-County. The Big Bend Community Action Committee, BBCAC, a nonprofit established in 1956 to provide critical public assistance programs to low-income residents in the Tri-County area, will soon dissolve as other area organizations take up its remaining programs. The shuttering of the organization comes 9 months after its chief executive officer and chief financial officer were fired for failing to complete annual audits for 3 consecutive years, leading to the loss of key grant funding for the organization. Several community leaders were brought in to resuscitate the failing nonprofit following the firing of top executives, including Big Bend Hospital District Director J.D. Newsom, who was acting as interim CEO. Newsom said after months of cleaning up the mess at BBCAC, auctioning off 27 unused vehicles the entity was needlessly paying insurance on, and more, it was clear getting back into good standing with federal grant programs was going to be extremely difficult, requiring paying $80,000 to retroactively file audits. Leaders have ultimately decided to transfer the operation of BBCAC's primary programs to other nonprofits and abandon the organization altogether. Big Bend Community Action Committee as an entity will eventually go away, Newsom said. All of the messed up books and poor financials dissolve with the organization. The organization's utility assistance and weatherization programs, which help low-income individuals pay for utility bills and lower energy costs through improved home weatherization, funded by the Texas Department of Housing and Community Affairs, have officially been transferred to the Community Council of South Central Texas. Newsom said there was at least a 3-month period where funding was in limbo, being transferred from one organization to another, and people who rely on the assistance program were left stranded. I know it put people in crisis because they were counting on that assistance to pay their bills, and the money just wasn't there, Newsom said. It just makes you mad because it shouldn't happen, but it did. The Community Council of South Central Texas has since hired staff in Presidio and Alpine to help residents re-enroll, and the program is now back on track, Newsom said. The transportation program BBCAC was running, commonly referred to as TRAX, T-R-A-X, has officially been transferred over to the Family Crisis Center of the Big Bend. The Family Crisis Center board was officially voted onto the BBCAC board on January 17th. With all remaining BBCAC board members resigning. BBCAC staff and offices in Marfa and Presidio will now fall under the purview of the Family Crisis Center. The TxDOT-funded program is currently helping transport elderly residents or those without vehicles to doctor's appointments. Drivers take patients, including those that require daily dialysis, to Fort Stockton, Odessa, and as far away as El Paso. Leticia Carrillo, executive director of the Family Crisis Center, said the nonprofit agreed to take over the transportation services because its board of directors believed the service is both helpful for their clients, survivors of violence, crimes, and sexual assault, as well as the general public. While it's not a perfect fit, we're going to make it work because transportation is needed, Carrillo said. We don't want to have people that can't make a doctor's appointment because they don't have transportation, we've stepped in to fill that void. A consultant from the Hendrickson Transportation Group has been brought in for 6 months to help the Family Crisis Center improve efficiency and reliability during the transition period, Newsom said. The transportation program is so critical for our communities that we've just entirely focused on getting that back on track towards a valuable service for everybody, he said. In the past, the transportation service has been more robust, Newsom said, with daily routes taking people to the grocery store, post office, and pharmacy. But the program has dwindled in the past few years and is now primarily providing medical transport. Correa said the entity is currently looking to hire new drivers to join their team and aims to eventually expand local routes, creating a twice-weekly route from Terlingua to Alpine. We're hoping to grow it as soon as we can, she said. The Family Crisis Center currently serves the Tri-County region in addition to Terrell and Pecos counties. The transportation program overlaps with that coverage area in the Tri-County region, but includes Hudspeth and Culbertson counties, areas without any crisis center services, offering a potential future expansion for the Family Crisis Center. Long term, I think this helps them as well to be able to provide services to a larger geographic area, Newsom said.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, February 22nd. Meet the Candidates Forum held. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. Several local candidates participated in the Meet the Candidates Forum last Thursday, February 15th, at the Ward County Event Center. The event was hosted by the Monahans Chamber of Commerce. The incumbents and candidates were all allowed 3 minutes to introduce themselves with a brief introduction, after which they were allowed to speak during two more rounds consisting of two questions for each candidate who is running for a contested position. The first question was why and how each candidate would perform his or her duties of the office if elected. The next set of questions included how challenges would be met, what improvements would be made, and what goals would be set as far as involving the county as a whole. Candidates who are running for County Commissioner of Precinct 1 are Guy Thames, Alex Luna, and incumbent Tino Sanchez. The Commissioner of Precinct 3 position is being sought by Billy Redman, Bill Clayton, and Robert Vasquez. Ricky Allen is seeking the Constable's position for Precinct 1 and 4. While the Sheriff's Office is between incumbent Ferran Valle and opponent Michael Franco. Three candidates are running unopposed but were present to introduce themselves to the public. They were Vicki Heflin, Ward County Tax Collector Assessor, Justin Till, Ward County Attorney, and Alan Nicholas, District Judge. Event moderator Travis Sawyer told the candidates and spectators that two questions would be posed to the candidates, but only those running in opposed races. Each candidate would have 3 minutes to respond to the question. The questions would be asked in the following order. DA, Constable, Commissioner Precinct 1, Commissioner Precinct 3, and last, the Sheriff's Office. The first question for the District Attorney's Office was addressed to Sarah Stogner. Quote, what is your priority for our district, and how do you plan to tackle that and accomplish it? Quote, first, I want input from all the citizens in what you do want from your district attorney. I know I want the sheriff's office help when I need it. If there is a crime committed, I want prosecution and follow through. I want our neighborhoods to be safe for kids. I want to be an advocate for victims, and I want to uphold justice. Monterey. Mr. Allen, what made you decide to run for constable? Quote, my decision was really pretty simple. I enjoy being a peace officer, but I decided I need to do something to provide a better lifestyle for my family. When this opportunity came up, I kicked it around for a while and decided that serving papers, working with the police and the people of the community, along with more time to spend with my family, was what I wanted to do. Sawyer then moved on to the Precinct 1 race by asking Mr. Luna, what specific goals do you have for your precinct? Quote, my specific goals, I have so many, first, Barstow and fixing up the park. I travel the county roads, all the county roads. My goal is to fix those roads, and in Barstow, there is no street signs. We need street signs. My other goal is to help the people of Ward County. Sawyer, Mr. Sanchez, the same question to you. Quote, this is my eighth year, the finish to my second term. I am a lifelong member of Ward County, and my wife is too. I'm pretty sure you know my wife. She is retired from the post office. In Ward County, I have been doing everything I can to keep it going and make it better and better. There is no stopping. We are still going, and we are going to continue going to do what I can. My door is always open, and anybody can come talk to me, he said. Mr. Thames, what specific goals do you have for your precinct? Sawyer asked. Thames responded, quote, Precinct 1 has been neglected for almost 8 years, and anybody who lives in the Precinct 1 knows this is true. Since July, I have walked every street in Precinct 1, gone door to door, trailer by trailer, house to house, and talked to people face to face. I know what problems the people are concerned with and what roads are the worst. Eva Street is the worst. It's terrible. The Barstow Pool is worse than horrible. Up until quite recently, the Barstow Community Center was left to rot. Coincidence that it is just now getting attention. Why not 5 years ago or 2 years ago? As a businessman, I can take care of the county's paperwork and money and see that goes to the places most needed, as well as the maintenance. I will keep the county structures in good repair and keep the gem of a golf course in its prime condition, end quote. Precinct 3 candidates answered the same question. Bill Clayton said, quote, I have been in Ward County for 30-plus years, and there was a sense of pride in our county and precinct. Everyone used to work together. Last summer, my wife and I went down to Grand Falls for a shindig at the park. It was the first time in a long while that I was that up close and personal. I have to say, I was embarrassed to say this was a county facility in Precinct 3. Something needs to be done about it. I want to have my ears work for the people, because if you are not out there with the people, you cannot hear what their ideas are. My whole goal is to hear the people and do for the people. Mr. Redmond answered the same question. On some of these county roads, the truck traffic is very dangerous. They speed down the road at close to 50 miles per hour. I am not a fan of speed bumps, but posted speed signs, yes, we need more signs. I agree with Bill Clayton about the park in Grand Falls. It is a horrible disgrace. I have been told it is chained off and locked. I want to know why. The kiddos certainly deserve better. They need a nice place to play and have family get-togethers. They have a really nice community center now, but the Grand Falls golf course is also in horrible shape. The golf course there doesn't need to be a lush green oasis like a lot of golf courses, but it can and should be a nice, easy, playable course that needs a minimum of water. These are just two of the things I would focus on along with all the other things in Precinct 3. The third Precinct 3 candidate, Robert Vasquez, gave his response to the question, quote, "My goals are a lot. In Grand Falls and other cities, fixing and improving roads, trees, street signs, fix county facilities, fix the county barns for the kids to have more auctions, have the Coliseum easier for the people to use it for more events, improve the senior center, improve parks, maybe get a park and basketball court on the south side of I-20. In Grand Falls, give attention to roads and bridges. My truck fell through a little county bridge. I want to work on improving the parks, golf course, to give the kids some place to go and something to do. I will ask the people questions about what they think is needed or needs improving to make the town a little bit better. I want to make the community center easier for the public to rent. I plan to work with all the other commissioners to improve the county." Sawyer then turned to the sheriff's race with the question, "What made you decide to peruse a career in law enforcement and seek the position of sheriff? Mr. Franco, you are next." Quote, "So, my dad was the one who inspired me all my life. He was one of the main things that drove me to want to be a police officer. I saw the respect given an officer, how they presented themselves, and the whole look of the uniform and professionalism. After graduating from the academy, I loved the whole aspect of being a law enforcement officer because that's what I knew growing up. Then, 4 years ago, in the same room, things were told they would be done, but they did not get done. In respect to what I want to get done, I want to make sure I have deputies out there, in sight, on the streets, so people can see the support. This is what was said 4 years ago. It was then that God laid in on my heart to forward progress and do the job myself, and that's what I followed, through prayer and petition. I felt it was extremely important for me to listen to what had been laid on my heart. That's when I decided to run for sheriff and put serve back into the community we all live in." "Sheriff Valle, what is your response to the same question?" Sawyer prompted. Quote, "It all started for me when I was a sophomore in high school. Eric White had a law enforcement program, and I took it. That's when I started learning about law enforcement, radio communications, and building community services. In 1992, I applied with the Sheriff's Department several times and finally became a 19-year-old dispatcher. Then I started moving up, first to being a jailer, then in 2000 I became a police officer, and that's when I fell in love with law enforcement. I have worked my way from the bottom to the top, dispatcher, jailer, deputy, supervisor, and now sheriff. I think I am the best qualified for the job and want to continue serving you, the people. I will do my job, and I have been doing my job. I promise you that I will continue doing the same thing I have been doing and that this department will get better." End quote. Early voting for the March primary elections began Tuesday, February 20th, and will continue until Friday, March 1st. Anyone who wants to cast their vote early can still do so between 8 a.m. and 7 p.m. in the county clerk's office located on the first floor of the Ward County Courthouse. Election day is March 5th. School Board extends Smith's contract through 25-26. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. At the end of Monday's regular scheduled school board meeting, the board convened into executive session to discuss several items, including extending Superintendent of Schools Chad Smith's contract. The topic came up during last month's meeting, but was tabled until all board members could be present. After reconvening into regular session, the board voted to extend Smith's contract through the 2025 2025-2026 school year, with compensation to be determined at a later date. Other closed session topics up for discussion were approving to hire David McDougall as the auto tech teacher, accept the resignation of MHSSS teacher, girls basketball coach Victor Pallares, to have the superintendent do a property search for options to attain employee housing, and to approve contracts for directors, principals, and non-Chapter 21 business manager. While in open session, the board voted to approve hiring McDougall, accept Pallares' resignation, and to approve contracts. In other business, Smith presented the enrollment report saying, "Our January enrollment is down 3 students overall from our December total." Smith also presented the school calendar for the 2024-2025 school year. The calendar is almost the same as the current school calendar. Business manager Katie Jones gave the financial report to the board. Jones updated the board on special expenses showing on the financial report. The special expenses include moving $80,000 to building improvements to purchase automotive lift equipment for the field auto tech program at the Sudeth CTE building, as well as moving $185,000 to building improvements to purchase weightlifting equipment for the field house that will serve the junior high and high school athletes. The last item reported by Jones was moving $1,260,000 to co-curricular buses to purchase 3 coach liner buses for travel for extracurricular activities. All MWP ISD board trustees were present for the Monday evening meeting. Bobby Almanza, Josh Schwab, Raymond Reyes, President Donna Garcia, Steve Tuxhorn, Nancy Upchurch, and Steve Fine. MWP ISD board meeting are held the third Monday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at the MWP ISD Administration Building Trustee Boardroom at 606 South Betty. Any individual who has a concern or question can request to be placed on the board meeting agenda. Anyone interested in addressing the Board of Trustees needs to pick up a registration form from the administration office. Individuals may only address issues which are listed on the agenda, which is posted 72 hours before the meeting day. They must be registered to speak by 12 noon on the day of the meeting and will have 4 minutes to speak. The public is encouraged to become involved in affairs concerning our students. MEDC Board hears update on retail recruitment. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. The Monahans Economic Development Corporation Board met in regular session on Tuesday, and after calling the meeting to order, the first task at hand was to elect a new vice president. Current vice president Hal Upchurch recently offered his resignation from the board. Member Mary Elena Sines was named secretary of the board, and member Leticia Rodriguez as vice president. In other business, the board heard a presentation from Caleb Wilson with the retail coach on the ongoing retail recruitment. Quote, "Being we are only 4 months in, I would say we are in a good position and have had some interested groups. One of the main players right now is United," he said. Wilson explained the grocery store is currently looking to add 2 stores in the Midland-Odessa area, and they would revisit with them again after those plans are set in place. Wilson mentioned other businesses showing interest in Monahans are Shoe Sensation, AT&T, Wingstop, Taco Bell, and Factory Connection. Quote, "It generally takes 12 to 18 months to see some good results, So I think things are going great for just getting started, he added. The Retail Coach is a retail recruitment and development company in which MEDC signed a service agreement in October at a cost of $36,500 for a 12-month agreement. Services of the recruitment company are analyzing the retail market in Monahans to determine retail opportunists, site marketing, identify retailers and developers for recruitment, marketing, and branding, active rectification and ongoing recruitment and coaching. In resolutions, the board approved a resolution to obtain bids for paving, water, and sewer on Block 26 in the East Monahan subdivision. Construction on the lot has been held up due to an easement being sought by MEDC on a small strip of the property owned by the car wash. The easement issue began with a mistake which was made on the original survey for the car wash's land. The survey should have shown a 70-foot utility easement, but instead only showed a 30-foot easement. The easement was necessary in order to connect new sewer lines for future commercial development into the established main sewer city line that is located on the car wash property. In December, the two parties finally agreed to a shared easement, and last month the board approved an easement agreement with Car Wash 828. Adalto told the board, quote, "We are still waiting on the signed easement from Car Wash 828, but wanted to get this approved, so once we get the documents back from them, we can move forward quickly," end quote. The board approved going out for bids on the property. In review and discuss, Adalto told the board purchasing the dilapidated property located at 106 South Main Street to ease downtown parking was no longer going to be an option. Quote, "I spoke with Ward County Commissioner Eddie Nelms, and he told me the Golden Treasures and the building next to it do share a wall, and tearing down the building would damage the thrift store," end quote. Adalto said she would talk to Judge Greg Holly about plans for the building and go from there. At the end of the meeting, the board convened into executive session to discuss Block 3.193-acre tract of land. After reconvening back into regular session, the board voted to offer SAI Brothers $268,000 for the property, which is 80% of the purchase price less attorney's fees. If it is not accepted within 3 days, the board will offer the full 80%, $280,000. In regular business, the directors approved accounts payable totaling $26,300, which included $10,500 for payroll and salaries, and $10,000 to the retail coach, and $175 for the football program. The financial report reflecting a balance of $3.3 million in available funds as of January 31st, and minutes of the January 22nd meeting were approved. Directors present were Richard Irwin, Leticia Rodriguez, Mary Elena Sines, and Kathy Anthony. Chadich kayaks 62 miles in under 16 hours. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. Anyone who would become fascinated with kayaking while living in the West Texas desert is a rare individual, which describes Dean Chadich. Chadich is a 2007 graduate of Monahans High School and now works for Halliburton. Chadich graduated from UTPB in 2010, making him a true-born and bred West Texas boy. Kayak in a place where water deep enough to float a boat is a really scarce reality? Why? Quote, "I had some friends who liked to fish in the Pecos River back when it had water, and I would go with them, not necessarily to fish, just to hang out with them. I became fascinated with the water, the currents, and flow. I thought it would be fun to float it, Chadich said. Chadich developed an interest in kayaks and set about learning as much as he possibly could about them. Chadich's wife, Bernadette, shared his interest in the sport. They bought 2 10.5-foot recreational kayaks and learned the skill of kayak paddling on Imperial Reservoir. In 2011, when Imperial Reservoir had water, it was a really good place to learn to paddle, Chadich said. For the next several years, Dean and Bernadette paddled whenever they could work it in to their life schedule. Quote, but life took over, and for 4 years, we didn't have time to devote to our favorite pastime sport, Chadich said. Then, a few months ago, Chadich wanted to get back into paddling his kayak and started inquiries into a kayak race he had heard about. The Texas Canoe and Kayak Racing Association was sponsoring the Texas Winter 100K, or 62-mile race, which was to launch its 13th race from the banks of Lady Bird Lake, also known as Town Lake, and down the Colorado River, finishing at Fisherman's Park in Bastrop on January 27. Quote, I promised myself I was going to enter the race as a 35th birthday present to myself, even though I hadn't picked up a paddle in 4 years. The Texas Canoe and Kayak Racing Association promoted the race as a way to give paddlers a reason to get in shape and stay in shape throughout the winter, so I thought, okay, why not, said Chadich. Chadich and Bernadette loaded up the kayak and took off for Central Texas. They had to get there in time for the packet pickup on January 26 between 5 o'clock and 7 o'clock p.m. in the Holiday Inn Town Lake. They attended the pre-race briefing later that evening at the motel. Chadich entered the adventure class and would begin at 5 a.m. under the I-35 bridge adjacent to the Holiday Inn Town Lake on Lady Bird Lake. Quote, we had to paddle across the lake, then get out and carry our boats across land to get to the Colorado River below the lake. By the time I had paddled across the lake, I was already starting to question my decision about what I was doing. The lake water was dead, no help at all in paddling. But I made it back into the water at the river and started their journey, Chadich said. The race had a 16-hour set finish time and was divided up with checkpoints. The first checkpoint was 26 miles into the course with a time limit of checking in by 12 noon, and the second checkpoint was at 47 miles by 5 p.m. The race finish was no later than 9 p.m. Chadich said, quote, we lost some of the racers along the way. One tandem team lost their kayak in some rapids and were out of the race. The racers who compete frequently have boats that are coated with Kevlar fabric over a fiberglass plastic frame to make them much lighter and faster. Mine is a fishing recreational kayak, all fiberglass, heavier, but it will scrape by the rapid rocks without tearing the hull. By this time, Chadich was beginning to question his decision about entering a race after a 4-year layoff. Quote, Bernadette met me at the halfway point with a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and a banana, he smiled. I really needed a power boost by that time. I could barely move my arms at this point. The muscles in my arms and shoulders were screaming at me, he said. Chadich made it to the last checkpoint 10 minutes before the time deadline. Racers had to check in and be back out on the water by 5 o'clock. Racers had 4 hours to finish the last 16 miles before the 9 o'clock deadline. This meant paddling at a steady 4 miles per hour on an unfamiliar river in the dark. Chattis said, quote, "I don't know how I mustered up the strength to get back in the water, but I did. The official at this checkpoint told me that if I wanted to quit now, I shouldn't be too hard on myself because I had done a good job of just staying in the race. But I wanted to finish what I had started." End quote. After a day of paddling through rocks, rapids, and high-wall canyons, darkness set in rapidly after leaving the last checkpoint. Quote, "It was a little bit freaky not being able to see where the rapids made whirlpools while being able to see all the animal eyes along the riverbanks. Then the fog moved in, and it got really creepy." End quote. Chattis finished the race in 15 hours and 34 minutes. Quote, "But I finished. I could barely move my arms. I needed help getting my boat out. I was beyond exhausted, but I finished the whole 62 miles, he laughed. Chattis plans to race in the future, but not for about a year. Quote, "I am going to take the time to work out and get myself physically fit again and possibly invest in a new, lighter kayak. But all in all, I did what I set out to do, and that was to just finish the race. I proved to myself I could do it. Don't ever give up. Just keep on keeping on," Chattis said. Staw named THSCA Coach of the Year. The story was written by Armando Flores. The leader of the Monahans Lobos, Fred Staw, was recently earned recognition from the Texas High School Coaches Association, the THSCA, at the Region 4 meeting on February 3rd. Staw earned the honor of being named Football Regional Coach of the Year for THSCA Region 4. Region 4 is one of the largest THSCA regions in the state, stretching from El Paso and east between the New Mexico border and the Rio Grande, north to Gaines, Dawson, Borden, and Scurry counties, until the eastern counties of Crockett, Arion, Sterling, and Mitchell counties. Association members began making regional nominations immediately after the state championship games. Coach of the Year nominees must be a THSCA head coach, with consideration on their season records, season team individual awards, and community involvement. In regard to being the recipient of this award, Monahan's athletic director and head football coach Fred Staw was humbled by being recognized by his peers. He said, quote, "Winning the THSCA Region 4 Coach of the Year means a great deal to me. There are phenomenal coaches in this region, and I'm honored to be selected for such an award by my peers. I'm incredibly blessed to work with such a great staff and great student-athletes every day." End quote. In his tenure in Monahans, Staw's Lobos have earned 9 gold footballs and back-to-back district titles since his arrival in 2019, including 10-plus wins in the past 2 seasons. His career record is 55-30. His record since taking over the Lobos is 37-24. Gray pleads for 25 years on third DWI. Arson charges dismissed. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Johanna Pinkall Gray, age 54, of 1003 South Bruce, was sentenced on February 20th to 25 years in the Institutional Division of the Texas Department of Criminal Justice after reaching a plea agreement in the 143rd District Court by Judge John Smith on a charge of driving while intoxicated third or more, third-degree felony, enhanced habitual. Gray appeared in front of Judge Smith and waived her right to a jury trial and accepted responsibility for the crime and entered a guilty plea. Gray was indicted for the DWI on July 7, 2022, following her November 16, 2021 arrest for driving while intoxicated third or more, a third-degree felony. According to the indictment, Gray, quote, did knowingly operate a vehicle in a public place while she was intoxicated by reason of the introduction of alcohol into the body. She was previously convicted of the same charge on February 15, 2002 in Midland County and on November 8, 2012 in Ward County. Gray has also been subsequently arrested for the same charge twice since November 2021, once on May 4th, and again on June 5th of 2022. Gray lost her home in May 2021 to a large house fire, and she was staying on the property in an RV travel trailer, which fire officials were called out to in July 2022 after clothes in the RV caught fire. Gray was able to extinguish the small fire before firefighters arrived, and there was minimal damage to the RV as a result of the fire. On January 2, 2023, the fire department responded to the home again regarding a fire. Gray was arrested and charged with arson because fire officials said it was clear an accelerant was used. In November 2022, council members determined the burnt home on the property was unsafe and may not be feasibly repaired, and Gray was given 10 days to clear everything out of the home and off the property and to demolish the structure. Because Gray did not comply with the court order, the city stepped in and demolished the home and obtained a lien on the property for the cost of the demolition. The most recent fire was in December 2023, which burned Gray's RV, garage, and a neighbor's fence and storage shed. The council voted again last meeting to have the city clean the property and put another lien on the property. Because Gray's DWI charge was enhanced due to her record, she was facing 25 to 99 years in prison. Gray was also assessed $470 in court costs and given credit for 26 days time served. Randall Reynolds served as attorney for the state on the case.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.